Hi, this is Ken McCarthy, and today we're going to be talking about one of the most important topics in internet marketing. In some ways, it's the center of the wheel that makes the whole wheel turn, and that is the process of lead generation. And that's converting strangers, you know, people that don't know much or anything at all about your business or about your offer, into people that are paying attention, listening, and a percentage of them becoming customers. And if you think about it, that's really at the heart of what we're all doing. It doesn't matter what business you're in or what you're selling or even what medium you're using. It's really all about lead generation. And today we have, by objective terms, one of the top online lead generation people on the planet today. And when you hear a little about the business that he's involved in and what he's done for it and continues to do for it in his background, you'll see that that's not an exaggeration in any way. Josh Aston, welcome.
Thank you very much, Ken. I'm excited to be here.
Josh is going to be one of our speakers at System 2012, which, excuse me, System 2011. It's weird. I've been signing a lot of checks lately, 2012, and they've been coming back. Weird habit. He'll be at 2011. It's April 15th through 17th in the New York City area, but literally we'll be closer to New York City than we've been when we go to Chicago. We always, just for shorthand, say that we're in Chicago, but in fact we're out at O'Hare. This time we're going to be in a different state, but we'll literally be closer to Manhattan by many, many degrees than we were close to downtown Chicago when we were at O'Hare, if that makes sense. You can see Manhattan right across the Hudson River when we're pretty much on the river. And to get across to Manhattan, whether you take the ferry or you take the PATH train, you know, we're talking about a 20-minute trip, maybe 15 minutes if you're lucky with the train. So we're saying New York City. In reality, we're going to be in Jersey City. Best airport to come in is Newark. But if you know your way around, you can come in through any airport. So anyway, April 15th through 17th. And guys, this is the last big extravaganza that I'm personally going to put on. I love these events, love putting them on, love what comes out of them. And I'll be happy to participate in future events like this, but somebody else has got to do all the heavy lifting. This will be the last one, and I want to go out on a very high note, which is why I'm so glad that Josh is going to be joining us. Josh, let's give people a quick thumbnail of where you're at right now, and then I want to talk a little bit about how you got there. And this is something that I like to talk about a lot. We often see success stories, the people that are very accomplished and doing impressive things, but we don't get to hear how they got there, and it sometimes gives people a mistaken impression that we're born to this knowledge or this level of expertise. And in every case, it's a development process. And so if you're an absolute beginner, or you're someone that's, you know, on the road and trying to find your way, or if you're someone that's, you know, doing pretty well and wants to make a big leap, just realize it's a process. It's a step-by-step, one foot after another process, and nobody's born at any particular level. And it's very interesting to see how people get to where they are. So let's do a quick thumbnail of where you are now, and then let's talk. Go back a little bit and talk about how you got there, and then also in this call we're going to talk about things that people can take away and use in their business right now. So Josh, you were the company called Progression, and they have a unique place in the marketplace. Can you talk a little bit about it?
Sure, definitely. Yeah. So Progression Marketing is the exclusive marketing firm for Lexington Law. So LexingtonLaw.com. We also market CreditRepair.com. And really, we use creditrepair.com to drive sales and to drive leads and calls to Lexington Law for, you know, as we use it as kind of a hub to figure out if people really need credit repair and then to send them to Lexington Law and other various companies. Lexington Law happens to be a company that takes much of the volume. They're a huge player in the space. Some of the interesting things that have happened recently is back in July, Progression was actually acquired by a private equity firm called Harvard Investment Group, and so that was a big step in the right direction for the company, and it's opened a lot of doors, and I think it'll continue to open a lot of doors. But really, what Progression really focuses on is driving business for Lexington Law, and
right.
We've done
right.
it for
you
about.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah,
sorry.
Go ahead.
You mentioned that they're about. You mentioned they're a big player. Let's put some numbers to that so people can get the sense of.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of fitting that we're having the call today. Yesterday, we actually just broke our best ever day. And so business is going very well for Progression and in the credit repair space for Lexington Law. Currently, we've got about 100,000 active clients that we've produced for Lexington Law, and by active, I mean they're actually paying us at this very moment. And so that's a big number. I mean, that's a big number, especially for a law firm, and especially for a credit repair company. And so it's a very exciting time for the company. I think we've broken the record this year, the best ever record. That it's got to be 7 to 10 times already this year.
And wow! So, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's exciting. It's very exciting for the team, and above all, I think it's really exciting to see the hard work and the effort that we're putting into things is paying off.
So 100,000 paying customers, and these are people paying. It's almost like a monthly retainer.
It is, yeah. That's a great question to discuss really quick. So how it is, the law firm is set up in a way where they pay $99 as a setup fee, and then or as a first work fee, I should say, and then they pay a monthly retainer after that. And there's no commitment. People can cancel at any time. Most people opt in for the $79 price point, which gets them a pretty robust service to help them dispute items that should not be on the reporter or things that are questionable, you know, misleading, unverifiable, things that the consumer is questioning on their credit report as being legitimate. Basically, Lexington Law helps them dispute those negative items. And so $79 is a small price to pay for the impacts that it can have if something is to be removed and it improves your credit score.
Just to give people some orientation too, this is actually a law firm. It's you employ how many lawyers and how many?
I think there's about 20 people. Lawyers. We have a presence in about 15 states, and so we've got affiliated lawyers as well that help carry the load. And so it's a big operation. As far as employees, there's about 700 plus employees, but about 20 lawyers is a good number to throw out there.
So the point I want to make to everybody, so it's clear, is this is not like, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. Let's put it this way. There's a lot of stuff going on in the credit repair space, and Lexington Law is an actual law firm that employs lawyers and does it on a very business-like basis. And basically, credit issues are legal issues, and if you're running into a problem with a creditor or with a creditor, yeah, I guess that's what you call it, it's really good to have an attorney who knows the ropes and can help you navigate it. And
absolutely.
There's a lot of credit reporting errors. There's a lot of things that are done that don't follow proper procedure. And you know, the average consumer civilian is not going to have any idea of how to deal with this stuff. And an attorney who specializes in this, you know, for him it's just, you know, second nature. The question
right.
is, where do you find an attorney, and what does an attorney cost? And as we all know, finding attorneys is really hard, managing attorneys is really hard. So here's a service that, for very reasonable money, you get the services of experienced attorneys to deal with your credit report problems for as long as you need it. You may only
Absolutely.
Need it a few months. Yeah. So it's a really. So I just want to make sure everybody understands this is a really good service, and something that. Even though it's in a space that has had a lot of, I guess it's not a mystery to anybody or a surprise that there's a lot of chicanery in the credit repair field too. This is a company that you can be proud of to be dealing with. So that's right. So now what do you do for Progression? So just so we can place you now, we understand this
yeah.
company, we understand what it does, we understand the
right.
scale of it, 100,000 paying customers, over 700 employees. And what's your role?
Yeah, so I'm the director of online marketing. So what that means, or the way we define that here in Progression, is I cover a couple major areas of the marketing. I cover lead generation, and the way we define that, because I know I've talked to several people to define it differently, but what I do is we actually collect several thousand leads a day, about 60,000 leads a month for our outbound call center to call. These leads are very much opt-in leads. These are people that are asking for a call or for a free consultation from someone at the law firm. And so we go out there on the internet. It's primarily done on the internet. We go out there, we place forms, we find strategic partners or other ways that we can talk about later as far as drumming up traffic. And that in turn drives us 60,000 leads a month. We spend about almost six some on a good month, $700,000 a month in just leads and phone costs of getting those people their free consultation. As far as the media spend,
wow.
we're talking about $500,000 a month just in the media spend on many on some months. So,
and then you're also working with or you're working with affiliates and lead
generation. So the other stuff that we cover, so that's lead generation. The other stuff I cover is paid search. And so we're spending a couple $100,000 a month to generate phone calls and leads through paid search efforts. That's we treat that a little bit separate of lead generation internally. So I throw that into its own category entirely. Lead generation would kind of cost. We kind of focus on a cost per lead model. Paid search we focus on the cost per click model. And then I also deal with direct response on our data. So I'm over and responsible for sending direct mail, SMS, and email to the data that to the data that we own or acquire. So definitely, definitely keeps me busy.
I would say, and the great, you know, we've had a lot of experts over the years, but I don't think we've ever had anybody that has been responsible for such a big public operation with so many moving parts, and this is what we're going to get. We're going to talk about this in the call. At this level. Tracking conversion and testing and experimentation and knowing where you're at all times isn't just a luxury. It's something that a company that operates this way has to be on top of that stuff all the time because they could very easily run off a cliff. I mean, a few months of not watching your numbers, and if you know circumstances change or response rates change, you could have an entirely different business in a short period of time given the level of their overhead. So one of the many things that Josh brings to the table is this understanding of the power of testing, how to test correctly, things that are worth testing, and then things that they've discovered, that Progression's discovered, and that Lexington Law has discovered in converting these leads. And some of this is pretty surprising material. That you don't hear talked about much, if ever. You know, it's one thing for somebody with a relatively small business to go out and have a big success story, but it's another thing for a company that has to, you know, basically feed, you know, 700 mouths a month and make, you know, several hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of expenditure pay out every month. That's just a different level of clarity, I guess, for lack of a better word. So now we know where you're at, and just obviously you didn't roll out of bed first day out of college and get offered a job like this. Let's talk briefly about how you got from where we all begin, which is kind of clueless and not knowing how the world works, to being in charge of a pretty sophisticated lead generation conversion program.
Okay, great. So back in 2002 is when I started to become involved in things. I started a company called 1-800-CONTACTS. Progression is located in North Salt Lake, Utah. 1-800-CONTACTS is about 25 minutes south of here in a place called Draper, Utah. And I oddly enough, started in the call center at 1-800-CONTACTS. I was going to college. I was in business. I was very much interested in the internet. But I was trying to figure out where I wanted to be in the internet and where I wanted to be in marketing. So I was just going to college, trying to figure out where to go, trying to figure out how marketing worked online. And a job opened up in marketing down at 1-800-CONTACTS, and I was able to get the job. I was pretty lucky, I guess, or pretty fortunate, I should say, to be able to get that job because I didn't have any experience in online marketing yet. I was able to get a job in a pretty small team. They carried a pretty heavy load with 1-800-CONTACTS. And so I moved down to 1-800-CONTACTS. I started off by starting up their online affiliate program and moved into some other areas like media purchasing. I made some pretty large purchases and media buys with Yahoo, MSN. We were spending a lot on paid search at the time. And so carrying a pretty decent load. I was there for about 2 years, and I was very happy there, but I got approached by a company that was basically Progression Marketing at the time, and the founder came to me and said, "Hey, we like what you're doing for 1-800-CONTACTS. We feel like we have a really good value proposition as a company. We'd like to bring you on." I was actually attending a conference at the time out in Santa Barbara at CJU, which is a decent affiliate conference, and he pulled me out of a session and said, "Hey, we want to bring you on board." It took him about 8 months to kind of talk me into it because I had such a good opportunity going with 1-800-CONTACTS. But at 8 months later, I was very sold on the opportunity at Progression and decided to make the move over to Progression. So when I moved over to Progression, the opportunity that I started with was actually starting an offline affiliate program. They wanted me to apply what I knew about online affiliate programs and working with online partners and take it offline. So I helped form a program that we have today that generates hundreds of sales a month that essentially targets and helps auto brokers, mortgage brokers, people in the finance space that want to send us clients as referrals, but also want to help keep track of those clients. So for example, a mortgage broker wants someone, gets someone in their door that doesn't have the credit to get a loan. The person looks at the credit report and says, "Hey, this is not right. Things are not here and are incorrect." He refers them to us. We help them clean up their credit or the incorrect items on their credit reports. And then we keep the auto broker or the mortgage loan broker up to date on what's happening with the client so that when their credit improves, they can reapproach them for a loan. And so that was essentially the program that I helped start and that I built while I started here. That quickly moved in. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's just such a great business model there. Because sometimes transactions, or very often transactions, are dependent on things other than the immediate transaction. And this is, you know, in the case of buying a car or buying a home, often credit's one of those things that's involved. And so there's a lot of sales out there that don't happen because of these external features or external events, you know. So
yeah.
Providing this service to, I mean, it's just brilliant, providing this service to, you know, car dealers and mortgage brokers,
mm-hmm.
because they don't have the time. I mean, they don't have the time to work with somebody on their credit, and they can't do the deal unless the credit gets fixed and repaired. So what a natural alliance, and I can see why people picked up on that very quickly.
Right,
and you're basically, you're kind of, you know, greasing the wheels of commerce with that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great,
cool.
and it really worked out well because you pay them a referral fee, and the more important to them is that they get to turn that into a loan, which is, you know, much more money than the referral fee. But the package altogether was a great value for them to have. It really did grease it.
How did you reach them? Like, how did you reach the auto dealers and the mortgage brokers?
You know, to be honest with you, we were pretty lucky. There was a lot of word of mouth. So people would come on board, their buddies were in the industry, and they'd refer them. For a long time, that's all we had to do. We could barely keep up with the word of mouth that we started. And
no
so
kidding.
I'd say it was a good year of just following up on referrals because, you know, people would call in. We kind of structured it in such a way, too, where, you know, we'd give people incentives from time to time to send us referrals if we got a little slow. And it really worked out well. People loved the service. People loved the fact that they could get paid and that they could track their clients' progress to the point that word of mouth really kept it going.
Well, there's another lesson. If your product is good enough and well matched to the marketplace, and that's actually a huge lesson. You know, so many times people try to ram a product or a service down a market's throat, you know, because they think, hey, this is a way to make money, I'll sell them this. And here's a case where the product was so perfectly tailored to what the market actually needed and wanted that in the initial ramp up, the company didn't even have to do much marketing because people were just embracing it and getting so excited about it, they were telling their colleagues. This is, you know, sort of maybe seems like a simple thing, but you know, there's an old saying. I think it was Abraham Lincoln that said this: If I have 8 hours to cut down a tree, give me 6 hours to sharpen my axe. And you know, and this applies here. If you've got you know, 8 units of energy to put into creating a business, put 6 of them into making sure that your offer is not only just a decent product and good and all that kind of stuff. It's supposed to be that, but make sure that it's exciting. We had a call, by the way, a long time ago with a guy named Emmanuel Rosen who wrote a book called The Anatomy of Buzz. And this was long before viral marketing had hit the radar. But he was actually an expert on how to take products and make them help them become very popular. And you know, he had a million tricks, and he was really good at it. And he's studied he both from a practical sense. He was a marketing manager for a software company. So he actually did this in real life. But he was also had an academic bent, so he knew all the science and all the sociology. I mean, he's a real great resource. But at the end of the day, he said the most important thing is the product and how well
right.
it fits the market and how well it satisfies the market. And that
right.
that sort of gives you the jet fuel to leave orbit, to get out of the Earth's orbit. But if you don't have that, you're not going to get off the launch pad. So a little diversion there, but kind of important. Something that we talk about a lot at the system seminar is getting your concept right first. And you can know a whole lot about how right or not right your concept is pretty quickly. You don't have to spend years or you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to find out. So anyway, this product was so well conceived that the market embraced it and did a lot of the marketing for you.
It was, and you know, you bring up some really good points that were crucial to this working. You know, we did our best, we took our best stab at launching the product and launching the referral and setting up the program. But at the end of the day, we really just wanted to get it launched so we could test it and test the waters and see what was going on. So we took our best attempt at getting it live. We took our best attempt at crafting it in a way where we felt like it would be that it could get that buzz, that it could get that word of mouth going. But there were probably two or three iterations where, in a period of maybe 3 months, we changed things because we saw things that needed to be tweaked a little bit. We updated them, and that's really what got us to the final product. And like you said, Ken, it didn't take months. It didn't take hundreds of thousands of dollars. It just took a watchful eye and the ability to make a quick decision if you felt like you needed to make it. You know, yeah, a lot of it. It's funny because I really like the book Blink, but you know, we kind of employed what they talk about in Blink, where you know you watch really closely, and if your gut tells you you need to make a decision, you make the decision, and you know, after 3 months we had a pretty good product, and that's kind of when the magic kind of started, and that's when things really got rolling. But it did. It didn't take a lot of time. It didn't take a lot of money. But we just had to watch it really closely and make sure that we were really being watchful of what the consumer wanted and what the referrer wanted, what the mortgage broker wanted.
Great.
But that's
and
really
there's,
all it
there's
took.
The key. There's the key. So you started with your best idea,
yeah.
But then you knew that the way you were going to actually have a great idea was by listening to how the market actually responded to what you put in front of it.
Right.
And you had built into your business the ability to adapt quickly.
Right.
You know, because a lot of people, and you know, they'll come up with a product idea, and they kind of get fixated. It's gonna be this way. And then if the market, you know, takes it, they're happy. If it doesn't, they push harder. And what they really should be doing, in my opinion, is adapting the product so that they get that wow experience.
Right.
Marketplace.
And you got to make sure you leave yourself the ability to adapt quickly, too. I mean, sometimes people will get really sold on an idea. They'll invest hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars into that idea before they even test it. They launch it, and then they realize, oh, wait, we need to make some adjustments. And at that point, you become more adverse to the risk, and you become more concerned about making changes because you've already invested so much money. You know, if you kind of just get it to launch and get it out there and see and learn from the real world of how it's going to be responded to and how it's going to be received, then you can be a lot more willing to make changes and to adapt quicker if you haven't invested too much time and too much money into it initially.
And the payoff is when you custom. And this is sort of almost like the process of custom tailoring. When you custom tailor an offer to a market's actual wants and needs and desires, they will take it. They will not only embrace it personally, but they will naturally tell other people in the marketplace, "Wow, this is great stuff. You should check it out." So this again, maybe seem like a simple thing, maybe seem like an obvious thing, but it's fairly common for people to come up with an idea. And basically roll the dice and bet everything on red, you know.
Exactly.
I guess that's the roulette wheel, but I'm mixing my gambling metaphors. But don't do that. Don't do that. It's almost like your first offers are exploratory.
Right.
You know, obviously you're obviously putting your best foot forward and you put you know your best intelligence into it. But until an offer is in front of real people with real money and you see real spending decisions, not theoretical things or people in what do they call it, focus groups. or asking opinions or taking surveys. I mean, all that's interesting, and there's nothing wrong with any of it. But you don't know until people either put their hands into their wallets or don't. And it's really wise to start every business with the sense that, hey, we're going to have to make a lot of changes before this product is what the market wants, because we don't know till they start telling us. Great. So you got great response to that, and with some tweaking. And then what happened? Where did you go next?
Yeah, so we got that established to the point where we were actually able to bring on additional employees to manage that. So I was able to kind of move into the next area and develop the next big thing. So I actually moved into doing media purchases, which I'd done that at 1-800-CONTACTS, but they didn't have anything like that moving at Progression at the time. So I actually moved into that area once we brought on some other people to manage the offline affiliate program. And what we did there, this was back in probably 2000, maybe late 2004, early 2005. But we were able to exploit an emerging area back then. We were able to purchase media that was kind of the first iterations, or some of the first iterations of contextual marketing. By contextual marketing, I mean we were able to work with some companies that were able to show ads. I'm literally talking banner ads, pop-unders. Back then, you could get these things through. We were able to test banner ads based on what people were seeing on that particular page. So we're talking if they saw things that were if they were reading a page that was related to credit repair, I was able to place a banner back in 2005 on that page or in that vicinity, knowing that they were reading something about credit repair. I was able to place a banner for Progression, for Lexington Law, on those pages or in those properties.
Gotcha.
And so that was the next big thing, and that took probably 6 months of my time to get that really rolling and to kind of figure out the secret sauce of the good mixture of how that was going to work financially and to bring us good clients.
Gotcha. So, what year would that have been?
About what year? About 2005, I think. Early 2005.
Okay.
Yeah. So I mean, it wasn't super early on, but it was early on enough that we could make it work. I mean, about a year later, it becomes so saturated and so popular, it was hard to make it work because the costs went up as the demand went up. But for a good 6 months to a year, we were able to just make a killing off of just that focus in that area. So,
great. And then where'd you go?
Yeah, then we decided we wanted to really get serious about growing our lead generation efforts. And so that's kind of where I got my feet wet, I guess, with lead generation. At the time, I knew nothing about generating an outbound lead and working with a call center to call that lead. I'd done nothing in that realm at all. And so that was my first opportunity to dive in and figure that out, to figure out how to acquire a high-quality, low-cost lead online. And so that's, I spent a good 2 to 3 years in that area, really actually hands-on managing the lead generation process, as well as actually being the point person that worked with the call centers to make sure that everything was flowing well, that the leads were converting, that the financials were making sense, and that we could scale the operation, scale the lead generation channel.
Let's talk about how important the phone and your call center is to your business. And I was really surprised when I heard these numbers and the percentage of deals that you close via telephone versus simply online.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. And then maybe if we could talk too after that or in conjunction with that about the math involved. Because obviously
sure.
it's a higher level of infrastructure to even if you just have one person working with you. Doing phone work,
right?
It's more money being spent, and
right.
Obviously, you guys have found that it pays. It if done right, obviously, everything we have to say done right and in the right circumstances, because you don't know until you test it for your business, your offer, and your marketplace. But let's talk about a number. Let's talk about numbers first. For instance, if you go to the Lexington Law website, one of the things you're going to see is the phone number is everywhere.
Right.
Yeah. And
right.
I guess that's not an accident.
It's not. No, definitely not. So it's interesting. I'll give you a quick background of kind of what we've done with our call center. And then I'd love to dive into the numbers because the numbers is what we that's really where we live a progression. That's really where we like to focus. And that's why you see the phone number in so many places, because the numbers have proven that it should be there. But back when I first started lead generation, we actually started with an external call center. You know, we just wanted to get this thing live, and you know, we couldn't get approval, or there were concerns about building something in house because of the money, because of the lack of expertise that we had in the call centers, and so we decided to start working with the call center externally. We set it up on a CPA deal, where if they close the deal, we pay them. But if they don't close the deal, we're not paying them a dime. And so we were able to figure out the metrics of what we could pay, and still make a good living off of generating outbound leads. So you know, you had a couple of different costs in there. You had the phone, you had the media cost, the actual how much did we pay for the leads. Then you had what's the CPA of what we're actually paying the call centers. But really, we knew what we were going to make off that client. You know, we knew what our revenue was going to be. So really, it's just a matter of doing the math and saying, okay, we probably need to pay this amount per lead. We need to convert X number of leads, and we can pay our call centers, you know, X dollars to convert those leads. It's not too complicated once you kind of start throwing it into a spreadsheet and comparing it against your revenue. And really, go ahead.
And this is an important thing that a lot of us, you know, have talked about over the years, but it's worth repeating. All this revolves around you having a good idea of what the value of a customer is to you once you get him or her.
Right.
That's what allows you to plan your investment in marketing.
Right.
And this is, you know, should be common practice, but it really isn't. Most people just will sit down and say, okay, we've got to advertise. All right. We need an advertising budget. Okay. We'll put aside this amount of money for advertising. Okay. We'll put out some ads. Okay. And that's where they leave it. And they have only the vaguest sense, if they have any sense at all, as to if that money is actually paying for itself.
Right.
Because they're flying in the dark. And so you know in advance, okay, if somebody signs up for one of our programs, this is how long they're going to stay on the average, which means they're worth this much, and it costs us this much to render the service, so we've got this much to work with to bring in somebody new. Game of numbers.
Right, very much so. And the more you can understand those numbers, the better. The more familiar you become with those numbers, the quicker you can make decisions on the fly too. We found that the more we understand each of the metrics that are involved in our kind of lead and sales funnel, the quicker we can make decisions if we need to on what to do in certain situations. Meaning, you know, if we know all the metrics from start to finish, so we know exactly what our lead conversion needs to be. We know what our call rate needs to be. We know what our inbound call conversion needs to be. By knowing all those different things, it makes us able to quickly figure out if a deal is going to make sense or not when we get approached by different companies or when we're approaching other companies for a deal. Again, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, where you need to do your best to understand the numbers, but then not be scared to try it out, to test it out. Set yourself up so that you can do a test, so that if, you know, if it doesn't work, you can back out pretty easily. If it does work, you can scale it. But you can't be too worried. Once you've done all you can do and you've got a pretty good idea that it's going to work or that it's worth the risk or the trial, you just got to dive in and do it at some point and see how it lands.
And I imagine you guys have a budget set aside for testing, and that
Yep.
budget presupposes that some of your tests won't work, and so the money will, quote, be lost.
Yep.
In effect, what you're really doing is buying market intelligence and research. But you go into your marketing knowing, hey, we've, in addition to, you know, keeping the ship float, you know, moving forward, we also have to continuously be testing new media sources and new conversion techniques, and some of these tests just aren't going to pan out.
Right.
Great.
And you know what we did? It's kind of interesting to bring that up. In paid search specifically, what we did is we started off by setting aside 15% of our budget for testing, and when we
mm-hmm.
first started out, we actually said, hey, we're going to set aside 15% and we're going to assume, we looked at all of our metrics and we said, we're going to assume that we are going to be horrible when we start this. We're going to assume that we may, all of these tests may be failures, but then quickly we kind of figured out how good we really were at testing. What was our success rate really like? And in a short amount of time, we said, you know what? we're actually pretty good about, you know, about 60 or 70% of our tests actually work to the point that we can continue them and scale them. And then you can just kind of start, you know, tweaking your test budgets accordingly. But we started out pretty conservative where we said, you know, 10 to 15% of our budget we'll use for testing. And when we first started out, we said, let's assume that we're not going to get any of this right until we actually figure out how good we are at testing and how good we are at knowing what's going to work or not going to work or what the likelihood of this something to work is. Then we kind of got more, a little bit more risky, I guess you could say, or, you know, we were willing to get a little bit higher on the budget as we figured out how good we really were with our gut. Was going to work.
Josh, I can't hear you anymore, so I'm going to ask you to call back in.
Okay.
Oh, there you are.
Are you there? You know,
yeah,
I heard
yeah.
a weird sound. Sorry about that. I heard a weird sound. I'm not sure what that was. I lost you for a second as well.
Oh.
What point did we cut out?
The magic of digital. Everything came through. I mean, I just lost. I really didn't lose anything. You just
okay.
sort of tapered off. It was a natural pause, and then I.
Perfect. Okay.
The world of digital communications. This illustrates another, I think, really, really important and useful and helpful point. You know, first of all, if you're going to succeed in internet marketing, or you're going to stay in internet marketing, or you're going to grow in internet marketing, you're going to have to be testing all kinds of stuff. The positive side of this business is that it's a low, if you know what you're doing, it's a very low capital, low risk kind of business to be in with a very high upside. That's the positive thing. The other side, this is a lot. There's a lot to learn on the front end, and there's a lot to continuously learn. So if you like learning and you like exploring and experimenting with new stuff, there's hardly a better profession you could be in, because this profession requires that you be doing it all the time. I think that's fair to say, right, Josh?
Oh, I absolutely agree. Yeah, especially, yeah. I mean, you've got to be testing to really. And we're firm believers in testing and knowing that if we're testing, that kind of allows us to stay ahead of the competition and to make sure that we're keeping our, you know, our blade sharpened and things are going well.
Yep. And there's another sort of related principle here, which is when you are doing something new, it's really good to set a low bar initially.
Right.
And not to, because I think that's what paralyzes people. And I see this a lot. I experience a lot myself when I'm trying new things. It's scary to try something new. And what makes it easier is if you just sit back and say, okay, what am I really realistically expecting to get from my initial attempts? And if you know that your initial, you're going to be, if you know, let's put it this way, if you know you're going to be bad in the beginning and you're going to make all kinds of mistakes and you go in accepting that, it takes a lot of the pressure off. I'm reminded of this story. I don't know why it's popping in my head, but it's sort of apropos, which is there was this kid that was trying to learn to play baseball, and he was just swinging wildly at all the balls and not hitting anything and getting really profoundly frustrated, and it was getting worse instead of better. So what his coach said was, all right, from now on, just sit there and let the balls go by. Don't even swing at them. Just watch them go by. Take the strike and just – be calm as you watch him. Just pay attention to everything that's going on. And he did that, and that little trick helped him break the sort of mind lock he was in. So he had absolutely zero expectations of success, and all he was required to do is simply to pay attention, just to stand in the batter's box, watch the pitcher pitch, and watch the ball go over the plate, either a strike or a ball, but not to be worried at all. And that little mental trick made a huge difference in how he approached batting, and he finally got into the swing of it. And I think that's a good approach to take with business. I mean, not to deliberately do nothing, but not to have such, you know, high expectations of your original, of what your initial results are going to be, especially when something is new. It takes a lot of pressure off, gets you in the game faster, and then gets you racking up the experience you need to have a realistic appraisal of how well you're going to do over time. So great. So lots of testing. Now let's talk about we were talking about the call center, and now a company of Josh's size uses a call center with lots and lots of employees, but all this can be scaled down to one employee, or a part-time employee, or, you know, if you have a very small operation, or a couple of hours a day. Depending on the size of your operation. So don't think that, oh, well, this can only be done by a massive company that's got hundreds of employees and has, you know, got marketing budget in the hundreds of thousands. The principle of integrating phone with internet apply. So how do you guys do it in practice? And
yeah,
and what percent? And one other thing, what percentage of your business comes from the phone? So.
Right. So phone is massive. Let me talk a little bit first about how we do it. So I'll give you a couple numbers really quick of that'll really set the scene, I think, for why we do what we do. We've got three different ways. Well, I guess we have four different ways that we can get sales where the transaction can actually occur. Online, of course, is one of those. And, typically we converted about 3% online. So of all visits that we receive, about 3% will actually convert online. And that's kind of how we started the business. But quickly we learned, hey, we've got to be able to do better than 3%. If we can do better than 3%, there's a lot of money there. We can increase our payouts. We can take a bigger profit. There's a lot of upside to figuring out how to better 3%. And when we started, we weren't 3%. We were 1%. Then we grew to 2%. Then we grew to 3%. Well, once we hit about 3%, it became harder to get the incremental growth. And so we thought,
this is pure automated sale. In other words, they're driven to the website, and everything related to that transaction is basically self-serve, no human intervention at all.
Right, absolutely. Yep. So it's all entirely done on the website. The transaction, everything occurs, the processing of payment, all of that is done automated. Let's think outside of the box and figure out how we can get better than 3% conversion. Let's start throwing things up on the whiteboard. Let's figure out the best way to do this. And, that's when we started testing inbound phone calls. I thought this was kind of weird. Isn't online marketing supposed to be driving sales to the online website and the transaction occurs there and everybody's happy? Well, fast forwarding to today, it's quite the opposite. We get very, very few sales on the website. Most of the sales actually occur by phone. And what we did is we looked at the 3%. We said, okay, well, what if we drive an inbound phone call? And so we start driving inbound phone calls. And just like you said, Ken, we started with few people. We started with just a handful of people, commission based, low risk. We kept our finger tight on the pulse to say, hey, how are these calls being received? How are these, what are the consumers like? What type of script can we have? But we started super, super simple, to the point that it's pretty surprising when I look back now from where we've come from to where we are now. But it worked. It worked, and it got us launched. And so we started testing inbound phone calls, and we quickly learned that we were able to get a 45% conversion rate on an inbound phone call.
Well,
so we're going from 3% online conversion to a 45% inbound phone call.
I don't even know how to calculate what the improvement is. It's funny, but it's an important bit of arithmetic that some people overlook. For instance, earlier you said you went from 1% conversion to 2% conversion.
Right.
Now, the average person would say, well, all right, a 1% improvement, that's okay, I guess. No. When you go from 1% to 2%, you had a 100% improvement in your results. So when you went from 3% to 40%, 40?
Yes, to 40. So here's the math. There's a little bit more to it, but because you've got to get the people to actually.
Oh, I just lost you again.
The point where if we can get someone to call in, which we've gotten much better at, you can get a 45% conversion rate. Like you said, doing the math is difficult going from a 3 to 45. You can afford to not get quite as many people to call in. If you just get a decent percentage of those people to call in and convert them to 45%, it more than makes it worth it compared to just doing the online sell.
Absolutely. And actually, I first heard this, credit where credit is due, from Jonathan Mizell, and it's one of these things that's obvious only after somebody said it to you. And he was talking about this in the late 90s, so he had a pretty good sense of things. And he pointed out that it's not a matter of getting more traffic. You can actually be in the position of getting, essentially all the traffic. I mean, and that's never literally true, but getting just a massive amount of traffic in the industry. Most people think in terms of, gee, we'd like to get more traffic. We'd like to convert a little bit better. And he made the point that if you could become the best converter in your niche, whatever that might be, ultimately all the traffic will start migrating to you because people will say, well, gosh, I can make a dollar converting it myself, or I can make $2 passing it on to these guys. And, you know, a lot of people are going to just say, hey, I'll just pass the traffic on and make money that way. So by making this, you know, massive investment in improving your conversion, suddenly you were in a completely different place. Lexington Law was in a completely different place in the marketplace because now you could go out and buy traffic at rates higher than other people. You could attract better marketing partners. You had to just completely change the whole complexion of your business.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And the great thing it did is it was so efficient that it did provide us a lot more money to play with. And what did we use that money for? We used that money for to expand into new areas, just like we had done with kind of using the inbound sell. It allowed us to expand into a couple. I mean, one, we then expand from doing. So we started with online sales. We moved to inbound sales, and then we started our outbound program. We started our outbound program where we could actually start calling leads, and then outbound calling them, and kind of rather than them calling us, we call them, but we get their approval to call them and start doing that approach. And you know, that wasn't nearly as good as inbound, but it was a new area that was not being tapped for the credit repair space.
Gotcha.
So there was a huge, huge field of open opportunities and open partners that had never run credit repair that jumped at the chance to try a new vertical and try a new area with us. They'd never run credit repair, and really being able to get the money that we did off of inbound sales allowed us and enabled us to easily go into the outbound channel. Outbound channel only converts at about, on average, probably about 10%.
Mm-hmm.
But it's 10% that we would not have got otherwise. Again, we just had to figure out the metrics on it, but having this combination results in a lot more sales than just having online sales as an opportunity.
So when people go to the Lexington Law website,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty straightforward as an online system. All the information you need is there. Signing up for the program is there, but also scattered everywhere throughout the website is the phone number. And I'm assuming you tested the placement of phone number.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, we did. And then once we kind of prove it, we start off by testing unique phone numbers in different positions so we can actually measure the difference. But then once it's proven itself out, we just kind of make the phone number consistent in those areas. So there's a couple areas on the website you'll notice the phone number. One is the top right, which has proven to be a good placement. It's funny because it's a smaller phone number. It's a subtle phone number, but it gets calls.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of that top right position. Then we've got usually about midway down the page, we'll have it as well. And then the most intriguing, I think, area that we have the phone number is when you first hit the page, we were finding that there were a lot of people that were perusing the site, going from page to page, sitting on the same page and reading every word, but not taking action. Even with the phone number placements, I mean, we were getting the typical calls that we would normally get, but we wanted to better that. We wanted to best that, the number of calls that we were receiving per visitor, or the number of visitors that it would take to receive a phone call. And so then what we did is we tried this test where we have this kind of overlay. It's kind of a pop. It almost looks like a pop under, but it's an overlay that actually shows up over the page. And we started testing that at about a minute mark. So if people were on the site for 1 minute, then this would show up in the middle and offer them a free consultation and tell them, hey, we've got a paralegal open right now. Give us a phone call. That proved to be extremely successful as well, and to drive an incremental number of calls that we had not previously received, simply by offering them a free consultation and offering them a way to answer their – obviously, they weren't taking action. Something was prohibiting them from taking action or not enabling them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Providing this other way this other method of showing them the phone number proved to be a way to get other people to call that normally would not have called in.
Gotcha. And have you ever tested the chat function?
We did on a few landing pages, and we've had a hard time getting it to work, but that doesn't mean we're done testing it.
mm-hmm. I have to think that, you know, based on just my own experience and which is somewhat limited, but also common sense, that it's a lot easier for people to pick up the phone and talk with somebody. Not everybody's
yeah.
a rapid typist. Not everybody's patient to sit around waiting for someone to get back to them.
Right.
So, I mean, if you're giving advice to somebody, you know, I'm kind of already stacking the deck here, but would you advise, if they wanted to become more interactive, would you advise them to go straight, you know, use these chat things, or go
oh,
straight
absolutely.
To
I think I think everyone has to test for their own, you know, for their own offer, for their own industry. I think everything should be an opportunity to test. The reason that we didn't see success specifically, and I really think it's specific to our industry, I don't think this would apply to everyone because obviously a lot of people have found a lot of success with chat. But what we found is, you know, our goal is always to get them on the phone call because we know that if we can get them to call in, we can convert them at 45% of the time. What we found is when we were doing chat, for us, people were asking us a quick question, and then they would fall off, and we'd never get them to call in again. We have a really good opportunity. When we can get them on the phone call, we can answer things and keep the conversation going. But I really think that might just be specific to our type of demographic and to the mindset that our consumers are in. I would definitely back that up and say you should always test all these different areas and give it a chance in your different areas or with your different website. Because I think you'll always see different results.
Let me ask about another thing that you may have tested. You offer this as essentially a continuity, in that people are getting. Well, let's put this: credit repair is usually not a one shot deal. It's usually fairly involved, and it takes place over time. And there's a lot of services that are rendered that way too. That just
right.
You know, if you go into the store to buy apples, well, that's pretty straightforward. You buy apples, you go home, it's over. But when you're talking about a service, and a service with any degree of complexity, it's going to take time. So you guys could have easily gone for a upfront, you know, big upfront fee that would cover everything.
Right.
But you've chosen to do these, you know, pretty reasonable, pretty modest monthly charge without a contract, which is interesting. We should talk about that.
Right.
Because there's a lot of people who say, oh, no, you got to charge, you know, some huge amount of money up front. And if you do have a continuity or something, you know, get them into a contract and all this kind of thing. Have you tested that? And what if you did, what are your conclusions? And if you never got around to testing that, why didn't you test
right.
the philosophical thing? Or
Great question. That's a really great question. So I think this goes back to some of the earlier conversations where we had where you got to really listen to the consumer and watch the landscape. So the reason we've never offered a contract is because if you do, as you mentioned earlier in the call, much earlier in the call, credit repair is one of those spaces where there's been a lot of sketchy companies. Many of the sketchy companies have actually used upfront fees as a way to burn consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result of the earlier days of credit repair where that was happening quite often, there's a lot of negative PR and a lot of negative blog posts. Even the FTC themselves, if you do a search on credit repair, one of the top results is the FTC saying, don't do credit repair. Obviously, we hate to see that as a credit repair company, but as you go into it and read the details, it goes into the details of why not to trust a credit repair company, particularly the companies that do upfront fees, that lock you into a contract, that promise results. And so the reason we've positioned ourselves to not take upfront fees and not have contracts is to help alleviate that concern that consumers may come with of, hey, you know what? We believe in our service so much as a credit repair company. We're not going to lock you into a contract. We're not going to charge you upfront fees. We are going to prove ourselves each and every month to you to show you that the service is well worth the $79 a month. And if it isn't, you can leave. We give you that opportunity. We're not going to lock you in. And so there's a couple reasons that bake into that, but one of it is you can read a lot of negative PR that's associated with credit repair, with, you know, taking the upfront fee. And just to say, you know, we've proven our service enough that we feel like it's a good value add. It helps consumers realize they can take the risk with us because we're not locking them into any big contract.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So, there is a philosophical component to it in that you feel, and I think this is a good policy, you know, if the prospect is taking a risk on you,
right.
you should take a risk on them as well. And then just the pragmatics of it, which is that, hey, you know, people don't want to sign contracts. If this is about increasing response and getting the maximum number of customers into the fold, putting up having them sign contracts, which is sort of the traditional way to do things,
right.
is a way to reduce response
and
probably reduce income.
Right. I think it fits especially well with the credit repair space. You know, again, I think a lot of these things really depend on the industry that you're pushing or the website that you may have or the approach that you're taking. I think with our with credit repair, it's just it's a good policy to have. It's worked for us quite well, but that may not be the case for someone in certain health verticals or other verticals, you know.
Gotcha. So I will say, you know, when you look at, we were talking earlier before this, we started the recording, some of the guest speakers, experts who are going to be speaking the same day at the System Club meeting are guys that have sold, I mean, literally put billions of letters into the mail and generated billions of dollars in revenue. And this is in the mail order publishing arena, companies like Rodale and Boardroom Books. And they all have gone to a model of continuity.
Right.
You know, getting into low cost, cancel anytime. These are things that the publishing, and then some of this stuff goes way back, you know, back to the 30s and when Maxwell Maltz, Maxwell Sackheim, who started Book of the Month Club, he discovered that people liked the idea of, you know, low upfront risk and then being able to drop out at any time. And by reducing the friction at the beginning of the relationship, more people tested it out. And the more people that tested out, the more people found that they liked it. We have people that drop out after the first month. Absolutely, you know. But again, you have to do your math, and Josh just pointed that out. But it's definitely something to test. It's definitely worth testing a, you know, low price point, low or no commitment, as a way to get more people in the door. And if you have a good service and it really does what it's supposed to do, you'll find people staying and doing that all-important thing, which we talked about at almost the beginning of the call, which is they'll tell friends. And I imagine you're getting a fair amount of internal referrals, customers telling customers, family members
Absolutely.
Telling family
Absolutely,
members.
Absolutely, yep.
And I venture to say that, you know, that's probably, you know, certainly in the top three signs that a business is on the right track. That not only, you know, is your marketing working, not only are your numbers working, but you're getting, quote, free publicity and free sales because your service is so good and is delivered so well that your customers are just naturally tell other people about it. And that's always going to be the best advertising you ever get. In fact, I would say that every whatever business you're in, you should be designing your systems in such a way that happens. And that, of course, starts with a good product. Because that just, I mean, what's it worth to you, Josh, when people just show up at the door and say, sign me up?
You know what I mean? Yeah, we hate that. We hate when that happens.
But it probably happens a fair amount. I don't know if you have numbers on
it. It does. Every single day. Every single day. Yep.
Yeah. And that's just, wow, that's about as close to free money as any of us will get. And yet
right.
It's within our control based on the quality of our service and how we live up to our promises and so on. Josh, I can't believe how the time has flown by. I'm going to have to wrap this up. But just to first, I want to thank you for joining us today. I want to thank you for being willing to come all the way to New York this April to actually teach live with our expert faculty. This will be April 15th through April 17th. It's in New York City, literally across the Hudson River from New York City. At the Westin Hotel, really comfortable, nice place. Very interesting part of the world. When you get there, we can literally look out and see the New York skyline right from where we're located. Best place to fly in is Newark Airport. Unless you know your way around the greater metropolitan area, New York metropolitan area, then you can fly in anywhere you want. But flying in through Newark will make it the easiest. This will be the last big extravaganza. I'm not going to do any more live events on this scale. You know, we're talking about hundreds of people and coordinating, you know, over a dozen speakers. I'm going to continue to research and write, teach. In fact, I do a lot more teaching than I've been able to do. Can't really run huge events and do small teaching at the same time, I discovered. It took me a couple of years took me about 12 years to figure that out, but I'm a slow learner, but I'm steady. And I love the small scale teaching because you can actually see results and the logistics are a lot easier. But anyway, so if you've heard about the system seminar and you wanted to check it out, this is literally the last time to experience it. We've been doing this since 2002 under the name The System, which is 9 years. And then I've been teaching internet marketing since 1993, but I started doing events in 1994. So that is a lot of years. I can't even calculate it at this point. But I will still continue to teach, but no more large events. The website to go to, of course, is thesystemseminar.com. And if you are serious about internet marketing, Josh, you've been to a few of these events over the years, internet industry events. You've experienced, the educational levels. I mean, different meetings have different purposes. Some conferences are really about deal making and networking, and that's really all they purport to be. And they, by bringing, a couple of thousand people together under the same roof, they make that happen. But in terms of education, you've been around and you've seen a couple of things. I don't want to put you on the spot, but where would you rank the system as a educational experience?
Yeah, and absolutely. That's a great question. I was very vocal, and I've been vocal with many people that I've talked to. I love going to some of those other conferences to make deals, to meet people. But the system that I went to, I guess was that last year in Chicago, the last system in Chicago, was I went there a little skeptical. I went there to support an affiliate partner that I work with, but I was amazed with the level of content, the expertise that was in the room and at the various events. It blew me away. I rank it as my number one, by far my number one conference in actually learning things that I should take home and actually execute, and that I did take home and execute. I had a notebook full of ideas that I felt were all worthy to test. And obviously I got back and prioritized them and figured out which ones to actually, which order to go through the list. But I was blown away. I was blown away by the level of expertise, the people that I met, and just the wealth of knowledge that was in that room. It was impressive.
Well, great. Thank you. And this year I believe will be even better and possibly even significantly better than last year. We always try to outdo ourselves. Again, everybody, April 15th through the 17th, thesystemseminar.com. Josh Aston of Progression Marketing, thanks a lot for today, and looking forward to seeing you at the System Seminar.
Looking forward to it. It's always a pleasure, Ken.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.